or you have decided that you are going to pool your money together, that you are going to take time off, that you are going to finally take that vacation you've always wanted to Europe, let's say, or maybe to South America, or maybe to some ritzy timeshare. And you're going to do it right. You're going to get a tour guide to take you to the best places where you go. For example, let's say you decide to go to Paris, and the tour guide takes you to the Eiffel Tower or to Versailles. But then the tour guide takes you somewhere else, to a place under Paris, where there's 200 miles of tunnels that was built in the 13th century to mine limestone that built a lot of Europe. And then in 1780, floods washed through Paris and through cemeteries. And bones and bodies drifted through the streets of Paris. So for 12 years, they gathered all those bones and put them in these tunnels underground. And this is the labyrinth that the tour guide has taken to you. And then he points to a sign that says, right in front of all of these catacombs, stop. This is the Empire of the Dead. Well, maybe you decided to go to Rio, and the guide takes you to all the great food places of Rio de Janeiro and Brazil, to beaches, to tropical life. But then the guide takes you to one of the favelas, what we might call a slum. Houses stacked on each other, the extreme poverty that you might see in Rio de Janeiro, where there is drug cartels, and actually a quarter of the population of Rio lives in these places. Maybe it's your timeshare that you go to in Cancun or Florida or Las Vegas or Hawaii. And the guide takes you to all the hot spots in those places. But then he takes you there in the morning to those places where many people are maybe passed out, the walks of shame that happens in those kind of locales. And you turn to your tour guide and you say, why are you showing me this? I paid good money. I want to see what's worthwhile. I don't want to see this. This actually might be your similar reaction to the book of Ecclesiastes. We are going to go through a tour this summer. And it's not going to be any tour guide that's taking us through things. No, he knows all the landscape of life. And he wants to show you what it's really like. And many of you, while we go through Ecclesiastes, you say, why are you showing me this? I thought this was a church where it's supposed to be happy and joyful. No, the tour guide says to us, I want to show you what really matters. So will you join us this summer? Will you go on this quest with a guide who's going to look at every aspect of life and to show us what gives life true meaning? It's a doozy, guys. Here we go. Ecclesiastes is printed in your worship guide, chapter 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they will flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be. What has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. This is the word of the Lord. Well, you have to realize we're moving to different types of genre of scripture. This isn't simply a letter where you might get the social setting or plot lines or conflicts. It's not simply, you know, epistles, again, where you might have basic argumentation and logic. I might have confused that, letters and narrative. But these are moving from narrative and letters to now wisdom literature. And things change when you go into wisdom literature. There's poetry and prose and imagery. It engages our senses. And when we're in wisdom literature, many times we have to sit in it. See, wisdom literature teaches how are we to act in all the crazy dynamics, all the issues, all the situations we might face in life. What are we to do? Now, if you're an engineer and you like systemized things and just systematic how it goes, I'm sorry, this might be a little bit of work for you. If you're a storyteller and you like to live in the abstract, it might be a little bit better, but even for you, this book is hard. See, we're going to go through it with this tour guide, as they call them, the preacher. Sometimes it's interpreted the teacher. The Hebrew is Koheleth, which means a gatherer of information. The Greek, Ecclesiastes. So you have Ecclesiastes, the Greek of the Hebrew, Koheleth. And I think the preacher's an okay way to translate it. I think sometimes maybe teacher might be better. Here is this great picture of a person, calls him the son of David. It could be Solomon. It's just a someone that is high up, that has experienced life, that knows all these things, the epitome of wisdom. And we are going to learn from this person that has experienced so much in life. Again, this is not a G-rated book. This is not seeing the Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice movie. No, this is the BBC version. This is not a book written at happy hour. It's a book written on Monday morning. Some of you might call it pessimistic. For some of you might say it's just realistic. And again, it's different than the other wisdom literatures of Proverbs or Psalms or Job. One commentator argued that Proverbs is God's love plus wisdom equals the good life. The equation for Ecclesiastes is God's love plus wisdom equals you're still going to die. Many of you are going to be arguing, when is it going to get good as we go through the series? And you might be tempted to skip to the end. I don't think it's always bad to skip to the end of this book. We see at the beginning and the end, there's this narrator, person that is looking and compiling what Koheleth, the teacher, is doing. Sometimes it's good to look at the whole book through what the narrator says. But I don't want you to go to it too fast. The real impact of this book is journeying through it together. And then here the teacher is trying to tell us, why make your own mistakes when you can learn from me, the expert? What is the meaning of life? Well, from the very beginning, from this teacher, we are rattled by their quest for what is the meaning of life. Vanity, vanity. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Five times it uses the word vanity. It's trying to tell us something. This book uses the word vanity 32 times. So we should try to pay attention of what this means. In the Hebrew, the word is hevel, probably best translated vapor or breath. The teacher is arguing this quest for meaning is many times elusive. We can't grasp it. It's this smoke. It's futile. It's an enigma. It's a puzzle. All this searching for meaning many times is hard to hold on to. If we look at what the narrator says, the style that the teacher teaches in at the end of the book, that the narrator uses methods like goading us. We learned about this word, this prod that you would take to cattle to get them to move. And he's saying that the teacher is doing that to us. He's goading us. He's piercing us, getting us to think. 12% of this book is questions. Tons of questions over and over again. And many times we just read over questions, but here the teacher is using that Socratic method, the idea of asking questions to get us to think of what we actually believe, what we actually think. He asks the questions here at the beginning. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Now to another word we hear over and over again, the phrase under the sun, used 28 times. It's a very interesting word, interesting phrase. Now, unlike reading, you know, the Psalms or even the Pentateuch, where you are just bathed in like covenant language, the idea that God has made a promise with us, that he loves us, that he is with us in all times. We see the covenant over and over again. Here in Ecclesiastes, we do not see that. We see instead under the sun, meaning this. I am looking as the teacher of everything that is just in the natural world. There is no eternity. There is no idea of covenant and promise with God. I am just looking at what is under the sun, what is in this natural world. What can we find with meaning in just that? In the 16th and 17th century in the Netherlands, people started doing these portraits and paintings. You see one of them on the front of your worship guide. And these paintings, what they would do is these people would take what they valued, what brought them pleasure, or was maybe their view of success, whether it was food or travels they went on or instruments or whatever it might be. And the idea that this painting is called Vanitas painting, coming from Ecclesiastes and the idea of hevel, of vapor and smoke, is that these items, the things that they valued, the things they found success in, they are fleeting. They go away like this. And within these paintings, there were objects that were kind of the permanence that you would see in each one of the paintings. Some of the permanent ones you would see in the paintings is one of them. It's going to be show and tell today, everyone. Just deal with that, okay? One of them was a candle. And the candle would represent that things fade away. They are fleeting. They are a vapor. I'm going to put this candle right over here, and I'm going to tell about this later. This is going to be our table for this summer. So there you go. And that was a symbol they would put in the Vanitas to say that these things that they valued were fleeting. It's a story of an engineer at a Fortune 500 company, worked there for 40 years. He had a grand workshop inside this company of his life's work of engineering these things. And after he retired, they threw this big party for him, and he left. And a week later, he realized he had forgotten some things, so he'd come back to the company. And in coming back, he saw that these people were carrying all his life's work, all the things he had engineered and made, and they were carrying them out of the building and putting them in the dumpster. They were outdated. They were obsolete. All of his work. See, the teacher goads us. You think your life's toil is valuable? It is an end in and of itself? Don't make my mistake. Learn from me who'd experienced it all. Vanity, vanity of what is just under the sun. Maybe I should ask you that question this morning. What gives your life meaning? Some of you, I understand, you don't like to think in those kind of, what I'd say, existential meaning, the idea of finding meaning or finding purpose, like to think in those kind of ways. And maybe I've already lost you in this sermon. I encourage you, I think this way sometimes when I have to listen to people, there are things that go into my mind while I'm sitting and listening to a sermon. Sometimes I'm thinking about the game that's going to be on TV afterwards, or the recipe that I want to perfect at home, or a home project. Those things that you might think about right now when I'm preaching, those are the things that maybe give you meaning and purpose. And here the teacher is trying to say to you and wake you up this morning and say, is it meaningful? Is it actually valuable? What gives it purpose? And then he answers his question in poetry, verses 4 through 11. Through images of nature and life, he uses what's called a chiasm, which is, I would say, like an Oreo, like there's the two on the outside and what's in the middle. So he gives the same ideas on the end of this poetry, and then you get the central concept in the middle. And this imagery is saying all this work, all of these things come and go, but nature stays the same. The sun does all this work, but it's the same. The wind blows and blows, but it comes back to the same place. The rivers flow into lakes over and over again, but the cycles stay the same. The laundry that you do, the piles pile up, and then you put them away, and then they come back. The dishes that you think, finally, they'll be done, they are back again. The papers to file. The bulking up and lifting weights, you have to go back at it again and again. When they were in the caves under the Misty Mountains, Gollum gave Bilbo a riddle in The Hobbit. This thing all things devours. Birds, beasts, trees, and flowers. Gnaws iron, bites steel, grinds hard stone to meal, slays king, ruins town, and beats high mountain down. Bilbo, searching for the answer, in accident gives the answer itself. He says to Gollum, give me more time. And Gollum says, that's the answer. Time is what devours all of these things. Here's another thing that on Vanitas they would put. A clock. The idea that with time, things just fade away, but time keeps going and going. That you actually might look in the mirror and say, who is that? as you look at wrinkles forming on your face. That time stops for no one. Generations come and generations go. The eye is not satisfied, the ear filled with hearing. Even with all these things we try to gather, whether it's information or building our bodies up, over time it will simply fade. There is a temporal nature to us all. At the beginning, a generation goes and a generation comes. At the end, there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. At our cabin, there is these rocks that are formed, and there's some still these large wood panels that are just kind of, you look in the water and they're under the water, and they're kind of formed like there was something, a semblance of something there at some point in time. They're just not randomly there. They're put in purpose for something. And one day, a woman that Aaron knows from owning the cabin longer than I just came into it as marrying her, came to the cabin. And she explained to me that she used to be a little girl at this place. And right there where those rocks were formed, there was this grand pier that went out into the lake probably 30 to 50 feet that was filled with rocks and these logs. And they, as kids, would jump off the side and they would go into the water and play. And now she saw me with my kids playing in the water. And she was remembering her own life and how this thing had just faded away and was gone. And in my own thinking, well, that's not going to happen to me. This will not fade away. But the words in Ecclesiastes are rich. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to even be among those who come after. We will be forgotten. Our names will not even probably for most of us even be known in three generations. We will come and go. And this is the last thing, probably the most provocative thing in a Vanitas painting, and probably one of the most provocative things in Ecclesiastes that talks about, and that is death. That we will all die. So you will see in many Vanitas paintings, you will see skulls that are there to remind these people that their lives will come and their lives will go. This teacher is exposing something to us by demolishing some of the things that we think are okay, whether it's hedonism and pleasure, whether it's having wisdom, whether it's just eat, drink, and be merry. He is demolishing these ideas to build up actually what is of value. For those who live for anything just under the sun, work or pleasure or legacy, it will all come and go. And he's taking us on a tour to realize what is truly valuable. Maybe it just comes with age, but sometimes even in our own temporal lives, there are moments we realize that things that we valued are vapors, enigmas, that we've tried to build our lives on, but they just come and they go. I'm a little ashamed to even notice this because I might be dating myself now. Do you guys know what this is right here? This is a business card box. I mean, who has business cards anymore, right? Maybe some of you do, the older generation like myself. I had arrived when I got a business card. And this is what I had been waiting for. That now I was a staffer in Washington, D.C., and I had my own business card. Deputy Press Secretary Daniel Breed. Wow. And I recently found these business cards way in the back of my desk to realize what a vapor, what a smoke. Vanity, vanity. All is vanity. Well, why don't we do this summer? I'll put mine up here. Sound good? Here it is. My value, my success, my things that give me what I think is purpose. A vapor. With time, it is gone. And I, my own mortality. So I'd invite you. This summer, why don't you bring something that shows what you think brings you value or purpose or success? I don't know how you want to represent that. Make it something that can fit on the table, please. And you can do it, you know, inconspicuously after the service or way before, so no one has to see who put it up there. But we'll have our own Vanitas table. Our own portrait of things that come and go. Imagine someone coming and saying to you, I am the greatest tour guide of this world. I have the best perspective of this place. And you say, show me. And he does. He shows some pretty legit stuff that shows that he probably knows how this world was made. He might have made it himself. And you say, I'll go on that journey with you. I'll find meaning. And this tour guide shows you places like the favelas in Brazil. And he hangs out with the poor and the weak and the sick. And then he takes you to the underbelly of society, to tax collectors and drunks and prostitutes. Then to top it all off, he shows us death. And not just an easy death, a horrible death, giving up his own life on the cross. What do we say to that tour guide? What are you showing me? What is all of this? And he says, follow me, and I will show you where there is true meaning. Where that there is life than more than just what is under the sun.